7:39, the time. Welcome into the Aloe Fiber Studios. I am Tanner Schwint. That's Brian Gary.
That's Billy Joel, actually, but thank you. We do sound similar.
You sound very, very similar. And Andy from Bruno Lilly Legal joining us this morning. Havla is running behind. No good deed goes undone.
That's
or
correct.
What is unpunished?
Unpunished.
Is that how the phrase goes?
That's what she gets.
She is. She stopped by the Merc and got us burritos this morning, and then got caught up in a traffic jam. So she's headed this way with burritos, which means we may have to take them a little longer if we want our burritos.
No, and that's totally fine. And whenever she gets here, just let her in, and she can bust on in here while we're doing this.
That'll be perfect.
Professionalism does not matter.
Andy is joining us, first time solo in the studio for a couple of minutes.
You guys have to be gentle.
Yes. We will. We'll be kind.
And I promise I'll call you tomorrow.
Whatever. All right.
I didn't make that promise.
I expected this.
So we want to talk a little bit about Danny Masterson, because this is one of those cases for me, Brian. You read the allegations when it first pops up. We know the judicial system takes a while for everything to play out. It falls off the front page of all the news. It falls out of people's minds. And they're like, oh, yeah, whatever happened with that?
Well, and for those who are wondering, name sounds familiar. He was a guy from that 70s show, Hyde from that 70s show, which I watched all the time. I loved that show. And he was a great character.
I loved him in that 70s show. I was a huge fan, but it's specifically not in that 90s show.
Because of this case.
Yeah.
And
he left
he was booted from the ranch with Ashton Kutcher and Sam Elliott for the same thing because of these allegations. And I know that people can get dismissed as soon as something is just alleged in the press. You're guilty. I mean, it can get that way as far as if you were scheduled to do something, if you were on a sports team, if you're on something, because it's easier to just cut ties than deal with the legal ramifications until they work themselves out. And that's the key with this one, is the length of time it's taking to work itself out.
Absolutely. I think it started back in 2020, so 3 years ago. In this particular case, he actually stood trial. Went through trial, went to the jury.
And what was he accused of, Andy? Do you remember?
It was sex.
It was rape.
It was rape. He had three counts. So all three counts went to the jury. The jury deliberated, which means they go back in the back room. They do the whole let's vote and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And they came back and they hung on the verdicts. They hung, which means that they couldn't make a decision. They couldn't agree. So, you know, seven said yes, five said no. 10 said yes, 2 said no, stuff like that. So they actually
it could be as simple as one person can stop the whole. It has to be unanimous, right?
So yeah, and it's a famous movie, 12 Angry Men, from way back in the day. That was
right.
The whole movie. It was one guy that was holding out and then convinced everyone else. But yeah, you can hang. You can hang 11 to 1 or 1 to 11. And typically the parties want to know which way everyone was going, so they kind of know what they want to do. But what happens is then it's considered a mistrial. The trial never happened? Well, there's no ties, but it's a tie. You guys get to do it again. So you get a short period of time to bring it back. You get a new jury. You get to retry the case. And then they get another bite at the apple. Both sides do.
Who does a retrial benefit more, the defense or the prosecution?
It depends. It's why you want to know which way the jury was going. So
does that information go to the public? It's a hung jury, do you know how close it was one way or the other? Is that information given to the public?
We know it in this case, yeah. No, they split. I'm going to misquote this, so I don't want to. I apologize if I get this wrong.
You're all good. Let's hear it.
It was like 10 to 2 on one count, 7 to 5 on another, and I think it was split right down the middle on the third. So for them,
There you go. Havel is joining us if you're hearing some rustling in the background.
That's the burritos being passed
out. That was absolutely.
The Mia Copa burritos. Who does it benefit? It's always interesting because I think both parties can get some benefit from it, right? Because you know what the other side's doing now. Everyone comes with their A game because you think that trial is going to be the last great moment to get your information out. so you know what the other side's doing.
How much pressure on the jurors is that? Like, when you know you're split, like, are jurors pressuring each other? Like, come on now, you got to come to this side. Like, is there wheeling and dealing going on inside of the, you know, inside of the jury chambers?
I can only speculate. I've actually never made it onto a jury.
Really?
Yeah, so I... Usually they don't put lawyers on the jury.
I guess that doesn't shock me.
And where I grew up, my parents were lawyers. So and once they found that out, they're like, "Nah, we don't want your dinner table conversations coming here." So I never actually got on a jury. But my speculation is that, yeah, they probably are back there talking with each other, trying to figure it out. I mean, they even bring you in. If you tell the judge, like, "Guys, we're stuck. We can't move forward." They will bring you in and the judge will give you like this mini lecture to be like, go try harder.
So that's really what happened in the first trial. They actually got the go try harder speech three times before they said, no, judge, we really can't make a decision.
So, yeah, there's some pressure on them because no one wants to do it again, right?
The money, everything.
The jury doesn't really feel the pressure. The lawyers and the judge feel the pressure, right? Like, the jury really shouldn't know about all of this.
Maybe I hope they do. Maybe a common sense person
will know that if we run this back, it's going to cost a lot of money. It's going to go through all the steps again. I feel like common sense would prevail. And if I'm in that room... That's a big hope. I know. I saw Havala's face when I said, I hope that common sense would prevail. But I do think that if I was a juror on there, Brian, am I wrong? You know, from an outside of a lawyer's perspective, if you were part of a hung jury, would you feel pressure to find and get to a verdict?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would too.
No, and I know that if I were... you know, in the 11 who voted one way and there was one going the other way, I'd be looking at that person going, you have messed up my dinner. You have messed up everything. I wonder, as attorneys, are you able to get a feel? Are you able to sense when, you know, this is going to be a hung jury? I can just feel watching them through all this. We're not going to get a consensus one way or another. Do you get that vibe?
We all have our own personal crystal balls we look in.
Anecdotal evidence.
Yeah. Havala's last trial, she came back and we were both talking about like, well, I think this is good. Well, I think this is bad. Well, they've been there for 30 seconds. That's bad. 45 seconds, good.
It's waiting for those test results to come back.
It's the worst part of your job is just waiting.
And trying to read the tea leaves about what's going on. Like, well, what did they mean?
What does this question mean?
And sometimes that question is like, when's lunch? And you're like, well, okay.
I didn't know that, first of all. See, you guys deal with this all the time and trying to walk that. But jurors can come back and say, we're confused about this?
Yeah.
They can. They can ask a question. Now, the answer they get might not be very helpful because evidence is closed, right?
That's what I was just about to ask. So if they come back and say, we have a question about this specific thing, who gets to provide the answer? Because you guys, obviously, the defense and the prosecution will have two different answers to it. Who gets to decide that?
Well, so there's a mini meeting. So the question comes in, the judge reviews it, gives copies to the attorneys. Then there's a private meeting between the judge and the attorneys, and they decide, is this question proper? Are we going to answer it? If so, how are we going to answer it? And then the judge, after discussing it with the lawyers and having a consensus, the judge decides and then sends a written statement back to the jury. So, like, if they say, we don't understand reasonable doubt, for instance, which is kind of a hot topic right now because the reasonable doubt instruction in Colorado just was changed. So you get a lot of jurors saying, we don't understand this instruction. Sometimes the parties will agree to change the instruction back to the old instruction. Sometimes they'll just say, you have the instructions, you figure it out. That's the law.
We're talking with Havala and Andy from Bruno Lilly Legal here this morning. Just a quick reminder, anything you hear here is not legal advice. This is for entertainment purposes only.
Now, the first one resulted in a hung jury, so they're going to go back and they're going to retry.
They're
right?
on 4.5 days of the deliberation on the
already,
retrial.
Yeah, they've already done the second.
So we're waiting for the jury verdict on the second trial.
The jury is back at trying to figure out if he's guilty or not.
4.5 days of deliberation already.
It's a lot.
That is a long time, and that doesn't really lean towards guilty, does it?
Well.
I mean, look in your glasses, get out my crystal ball.
Yeah.
I would guess that it's probably leaning towards another hung jury.
What happens if that happens? Do they run it back again?
Yeah, so there's like this interesting podcast about this gentleman who was charged with murder from like the 80s, I think. And they kept getting mistrial and they kept getting reversed on appeal. And he was tried maybe 12 times before they finally decided, they got a new prosecutor and they finally decided to dismiss the charges. And I can't remember that guy's name at this point. But like
12 times on the same case?
It's up to the prosecutor. Like, and that's why knowing how the votes landed is so important. Like, and at the first trial, it was pretty favorable to Masterson, so the prosecution made some changes at the second trial.
And you got to remember, just when the first trial is done, you can go back and negotiate. So does the prosecution realize, like, oh, this split 10-2 in your favor. I need to make a better deal. Or it can go the other way. It goes 2-10 in the prosecution's favor. Maybe all of a sudden then you're back to revisiting.
If there is a hung jury and then there's a second trial like there is here, mm-hmm. Do you have to just use the same evidence that you had in the first trial, or are you can new evidence be brought in between the first trial and a retrial?
I would say it depends is the standard lawyer question, but usually yes, you can bring in new information. There can be new evidence because you're probably addressing what the other side's argued. If you know what they're going to say, A, B, and C, you want to say, well, anti-A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. So you're probably presenting different stuff. You're going through different things.
And in this case, that's exactly what the prosecution did. They brought in an expert to explain some of the Scientology stuff because that there were some questions
Talk
about
to
that.
Me about that because it felt like—
Brought in an extra victim to talk.
They felt like they were trying to dodge the Scientology stuff maybe a little bit. What was going on? Because that was the article I've been seeing the headlines from. What was going on with the Scientology stuff? What was it?
Well, sounds like they didn't really present a lot on the Scientology stuff the first time around, but there's some pretty critical evidence about how these victims outcried, and they outcried within the church because they were all members of the Scientology church. And within Scientology, they have these rules where you can't report the crime to law enforcement unless the church says you can, and you have to go through and report it to the church first. And in each case, the church basically decided not to issue a decision, which by default means you can't report them to the police. And so one of these victims actually wrote like a couple of letters, which were introduced into evidence. And so they needed an expert to come in and explain, like, well, this is why there's a delayed report and this is why they didn't do anything right away, is because they had to follow these rules. They're a part of this system. And they took a risk. Ultimately, the prosecution argued, you should believe them because they took such a risk. They stepped outside of the Church of Scientology and faced excommunication from their community to come forward and tell you what happened to them.
That is fascinating. It's disturbing. The whole case is disturbing. But watching it play out and watching how different people have, you know, different thoughts on the same, you know, how they can view things so differently on the same set of information that they're receiving.
Well, and it's got to get complicated when you bring Scientology into it. And then you're walking that line of religion and, you know, all the things that go into that, which still feels cult-like to me.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Me too. You know? Me too. When it comes to that, we're talking with Andy and Havla from Bruno Lilly Legal. So, how bad does it have to suck, or must it suck, for a juror to be part of this whole trial and then at the end you wasted 3-4 weeks and all of a sudden we still don't have a verdict? That's got to be a horrible feeling.
I mean, it sucks as the attorney, I'll tell you that. when you have to go back and get that verdict and know that, okay, well, we're kind of hitting the restart button. I don't know. I feel like maybe if the jury at that point, they've made their stances and they've made their arguments to each other. I mean, I don't know if they feel
could this
about holding
could this
ground.
Verdict be reached before the weekend, or, you know, if it gets to this weekend, is this jury going to have to deliberate through a Memorial Day weekend, or do juries split at that
Tuesday.
Time? They would come back after.
Yeah,
they get read the whole Tuesday. You know, don't talk about this, don't go to Dr. Google, things like that, and then come back. But they would get they'd be able to go home.
Is that just on the honor system?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really crappy system nowadays.
Yeah, and then you find out sometimes when the jurors aren't following the honor system because they can't help themselves. They share with other jurors who rat them out, or they talk to the bailiff and they're like, I was doing blah, blah, blah last night. You know, and all of a sudden, like, the attorneys and the judge have to sit down and talk about what are we going to do with this juror.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because Brady Hole shared his – he got jury duty, and he shared his story on air on yesterday. I was blown away by some of it because I still haven't been chosen. I still haven't got a letter in the mail saying, hey, we need you, Tanner, for your civic duty. Nobody needs me. 754, let's get the latest in the tech world. Here's Kim Komando.